Welcome to Making Sense of It All. I'm your host, Jesse Stakes. So this week, I have Amy Fargo and Brett Carnero from V2 Strategic Advisors. V2 Strategic Advisors is a boutique management consultancy firm that specializes in Salesforce implementation for clients around the globe. Specifically for this conversation, we're talking about implementing Salesforce for retail organizations. I've always thought of Salesforce as a CRM tool for sales organizations, but they really are so much more. Just to hit a few of the highlights: creating a retail media network, inventory management, personalized shopping experiences for customers, customer engagement, implementing customer loyalty programs, and creating a unified customer view of your company. Retail shopping has become so much more than just a storefront in today's world, as you all know. V2 Strategic Advisors are the behind-the-scenes crew that improve the virtual environment and your experience as a customer. Enjoy my conversation with Amy and Brett. Let's jump into it. So, Amy, would you be so kind as to tell our audience what V2 Strategic Advisors does?
Sure. So, you know, first off, thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today, Jesse. We are a leading Salesforce partner in the media and entertainment industry and have been for over 17 years. We are one of the 5 global launch partners for Salesforce's Media Cloud Ad Sales Management. We provide advisory, implementation, managed services to customers across a number of industries, including retail. We go wall-to-wall with Salesforce, but our firm's focus on approaching business problems from a segment-specific perspective is really kind of what's made us most successful as a systems integrator and as a partner.
Wonderful. Brett, what Amy just said is a lot. I mean, it's a whole, you know, to me, I mean, I just, when I hear that, it's almost overwhelming. So if you were to break it down into the simplistic for, you know, for the person who's out there and they're just kind of, they're learning about it for the first time, what does that mean to the layperson out there?
To the layperson, I think it just means that we're consultants, right? I mean, at the end of the day, whether you're on the delivery side of our business or, you know, even the sales side of our business, being a really good consultant, I think is kind of a part of our DNA. And really that starts with just listening to our clients. Oftentimes I feel like we're almost like doctors in a way where, you know, the reason we're talking is something's not working at your company, right? It's some part of the technology that you're using isn't performing the way it should be, isn't supporting your team, you know, in the manner it should be. And so when we come in, you know, we don't try to just assume that we know where the issue is, right? We haven't seen anything. It could be a lot of things. You know, a mechanic would never do that with your car. They'd be the best mechanic if they could do that. But, you know, you got to ask the right questions. You have to meet the client where they are initially, and then get into the weeds of, you know, what's going on and asking the right questions. And then from that, and sometimes multiple people too, right? Multiple departments, you have to, depending on the business process that is also kind of underneath there. It's going to involve multiple teams, multiple people, you know, gaining consensus, and then trying to, you know, bring to the table a solution, and explaining it along the way, providing the education so that you're bringing the client along for the ride and they understand it. It's not something that feels foreign or, you know, here's this company and they want to do something. I didn't understand it because it was a lot of, you know, jargon, but that's what they want to do. It's, you know, we really, I think we try to see the people first. We try to really listen, you know, to the individuals. And that's been one key to our success, I think, taking a little bit more of a, you could call it a boutique approach if you want, but, you know, just taking a little bit of a slower lead into the client and, you know, just making sure that, you know, we're meeting the mark and exceeding on expectations is really big for us.
Very good. Well, and Amy, I think that a lot of people, when they hear the word Salesforce, the first thing that they think about is a CRM tool or a customer relationship management tool. And it's, I think that kind of stops there sometimes, their understanding of it. They think it's just putting information in so that people can track them as salespeople. But Salesforce does quite a bit more than that. And that's where you guys are helping businesses integrate, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Salesforce provides a number of different products, solutions to various industries. You know, it could be finance, HCM, benefits. It's a number of different industries, retail, telecommunications. There are a lot of, different industries out there, and that's where Salesforce, products and services can be tailored and customized specifically for a large enterprise organization. And that's where that consulting comes in, where we really try to understand the customer's business inside and out. From various different departments, we typically hold workshops that could be 1 or 2 days within a company or enterprise company, where we will sit in a boardroom and speak with various departments and teams to really understand their business and a day in the life of that specific person on that specific team, and feel what their pain points are and get a sense of what their business needs are. And then we come back to the table with, okay, this is what we heard, and this is what we propose would be the best way, whether it's an iterative approach, a phased approach, a big bang approach. It really depends on the customer's needs and what they're looking to do. So it definitely takes a lot of consulting and advisory to make sure that we're aligning with the customer on their needs and, what are their revenue goals for the year or next year? And what are they trying to achieve?
Sure. Well, and Brett, I feel like a lot of y'all's job, it's almost like being a translator, and we're not translating essentially from English to Spanish or any other language, but programming really is its own language altogether. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, I deal with a Salesforce or other programs like that on a regular basis, but I have no idea what is underneath the hood. And so when Amy is talking about going and having an interview and talking to these business owners or these companies about what they need or what they're looking to get out of the software, it truly is like being in a translator and trying to understand what they are intending to mean and putting it into a language of software.
Yeah, exactly right. Most of the people, sometimes, we're lucky enough to, in those workshops include, somebody who's more technical on the client side, and we can have those, technical, conversations together. But most of the time, you're absolutely right. Translating, the business requirements into sort of the more technical specs, if you will, but that's a big part of what we do. But, I think there are a lot of different shops that can do that in a different way, that do that in a different way, and maybe don't bring the client along for the ride. And so, oftentimes they may feel like, okay, they're coming back and, they've just put this, document in front of me and I'm supposed to do this, but I don't know where to start. And it's again, all about, really listening, making sure that you're bringing them along for the ride, ongoing education. I think, it's something we try to impart on the folks that we work with. It's something we do for ourselves all the time. I mean,
right.
Sharing thought leadership, not necessarily the thought leadership that we're producing, although we do produce thought leadership, but, reading all the, articles about a specific product, getting into the weeds with our product teams that are working with the product so that, even if there's something we don't understand, we don't need to speak the language completely, but we need to understand the mechanics of it and what the implications are for maybe other systems or other concerns that they have. So yeah, just creating that level playing field and creating that common language, just to go back to the metaphor here. But it makes a big difference. And we've seen that people refer to, V2, I think, after working with us and say, you really are a partner, not a, some extra help that we brought in, which I think, they've felt with other firms that don't, you know, take the time to get to know them, take the time to listen to them. You know, we try to take a different approach.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I mean, I kind of liken it, you know, you can have a CPA as a business that all they do is do your tax returns. And so they're just taking, you know, they're essentially a vendor who's taking something off your plate. Or you can have a CPA firm that is truly a consultant that's actually helping you run your business in a more efficient and better way. And that's what it sounds like you guys are doing, is you guys are actually partnering with your clients and helping them run in a more efficient and better manner. Amy, I'm not going to ask you to divulge any client information. All parties can remain anonymous, but do you have any favorite stories about how you guys have helped one of your clients, you know, compete better in the marketplace or be more efficient, drive more revenue to their bottom line?
Yeah, absolutely. We have several. One that is really top of mind is a, you know, national retailer that we worked with who came to us by way of Salesforce and, you know, the collaboration that we have with our partners. We worked with Salesforce and this, you know, national retailer. Their pain point was they're a growing organization, ad sales organization, and needed to scale quickly, particularly after the pandemic. You know, as we saw, a lot of retailers were closing shop, large national retailers as well as global, and needed to find a way to monetize their website, bring more traffic to their website, sell more online. Whether it's, you know, their marketplace or e-commerce marketplace, just looking to drive more revenue in that manner. They were bringing in revenue, I think that was around $300 million, and were able to scale to over $1 billion in revenue within 1 year after we integrated and implemented their systems and platform. So, you know, they were an organization that had 5 people that were running their, you know, their ad sales organization, and didn't have the bandwidth internally to hire more people, but needed to figure out a way, how do we do this? How do we compete with, you know, Walmart or Amazon? And how do we bring more traffic to our website to monetize? We're really happy and proud of this story.
That's really cool. I think sometimes people get focused on, you know, we've done business this way, we've always done it that way, and it's been successful for us. And then they wake up one day or they blink, and then all of a sudden, you know, the landscape has changed, the culture in which people buy has changed, you know, and I think COVID was a huge, it kind of ushered that in much quicker than what people had planned. And, you know, Brett, can you talk to me a little bit about how COVID has impacted y'all's business as far as accelerating things or making people more aware of going digital and what that's going to mean to the bottom line for their business?
Yeah, it's really had an interesting effect. You know, in many ways, I think as Amy was alluding to, it in some ways slowed things down. And then I think, and at the same time, it sped other things up, right? So like anybody who was thinking about doing that digital transformation and maybe hadn't had the chance to do it yet or was still considering their options, they started to feel the pressure because they knew they were, you know, kind of late.
You're dead in the water if you didn't have it. It was almost like you're dead in the water if people can't walk into your store.
And then it was, you know, like who's even around, right? We've heard about service problems in other parts of business, but, you know, who's available? Some of these products are more nuanced, like Media Cloud. There are only a handful of partners in the world, quite frankly, that can, you know, really use that product. And so, you know, where people, I think what it's done to, or what we're seeing on our sales side is a lot more conversations, more volume of conversations, but the sales cycle itself is taking longer. It's involving more people. You know, people are being more thoughtful about how they're spending their dollars. They want to make sure that if they're going to do this digital transformation, or as Amy mentioned, retail media networks are becoming, you know, all the rage with retailers in general, in that space. So they want to, they just want to make sure that, you know, they have a partner that speaks their language, understands, you know, the marketplace. Again, it's about making them feel comfortable. And again, sure. I think it goes back to like not just asking them what the immediate need was at the time, which of course was, you know, we need to make more with less kind of, but what are the goals then beyond this pandemic and maybe a looming recession or something like that? And, you know, what can we do? So more volume, because I think more people are like, yeah, we need to investigate that digital transformation option. Or, you know, we've been thinking about this. We've never ripped the Band-Aid off. Let's have that conversation now. And then the longer sales cycle, because they're just being more thoughtful, more conservative. And then, you know, and then the deals, I think the ones that come through, are, I think I would say involving multiple products. So maybe in the past it would be maybe one cloud or one product that, you know, a client might be looking at, because quite frankly, they had the luxury of doing that. And now, because of the sort of accelerated pace of where people are trying to get to through the pandemic, coming into the recession, not sure what's going on, they want to make sure that they have, you know, as many tools in their toolbox available, you know, to do better in 2023 and stay ahead of that. So they're thinking about, you know, maybe not just the making the CRM work better as an example, but what do we need from like an analytics perspective to better run our business and know more about what our people are doing or how our sales reps are performing or things like that. And then who needs to see that information or what do our partners need to see in order to be really excited about working with us as a brand and what are the right, you know, portals or logins for them and, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, more volume, longer sales cycles, more products in the mix. And so, yeah, I think those are some of the ramifications we've seen.
So you said a term about halfway through there that I don't think everybody that's listening is going to understand. So if you would indulge me and explain it, retail media network, what is a retail media network?
Sure. So I'll answer the question. And I think one of the reasons this term has become so popular is, you know, as Amy was talking about with that large retailer that we mentioned, some of the advertising channels that, you know, were available to everybody, quite frankly, not just retailers, but of course they're spending quite a bit on advertising pre-pandemic you know, we're, of course, you know, advertising with Google, advertising with Facebook, you know, going to these juggernaut advertising players and, you know, enjoying, you know, the same performance that they were seeing prior. And what happened was, actually, it was the change with Apple, right? And first party data that kind of forced everybody to look to other places to see, you know, what else was out there from an advertising perspective. Amazon has been is probably the best example of what a retail media network is, which is really just, you know, using your digital properties to sort of create inventory. And then with that inventory on your digital property, say your website, showing ads for, you know, relevant products that, you know, you may sell or you may not sell, but it's a way of sort of creating more mousetraps, right? For customers that are coming to your digital properties already. If you think about a lot of big brands that are out there, and I think one other maybe trend we saw just in retail, and actually I think all across business was during the pandemic, a lot of mergers and acquisitions, right? So you have these portfolio brands kind of taking in a lot of smaller brands, but what they're able to do also is increase the number of digital properties that they have, because, you know, that sure. brand had a website or maybe a few websites. And so, you know, now this portfolio brand's maybe got 30 or 40 websites. They've got lots of inventory available to essentially create their own retail media network and then invite other, you know, advertisers and publishers to kind of play there and generate, you know, advertising dollars. And that's been something that for a lot of people, you know, was and still is, you know, very powerful for, you know, finding alternate ways of generating revenue now that, you know, the multiples from Facebook aren't, you know, returning as they used to.
Sure.
So yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell. Amy, anything you would add there?
Yeah, no, I'd say you're spot on. You know, you've got a lot of retailers who maybe don't have as much as an online presence as they'd like. And so in order to compete with, you know, the other retailers out there, and that could be supermarket chains, it could be, you know, your retailers such as, you know, your Kohl's, your TJ Maxx, your Home Goods, You know, when we talk, you know, supermarkets, it could be Winn-Dixie or Publix or Albertsons. So not just, you know, your retailers such as Kohl's, but we're also talking, you know, every retailer and every, you know, sub segment, really looking right. to monetize their websites, and bring more traffic in. And, you know, how do they do that? They work with other brands, agencies, to work with those brands, whether it's an agency that they're working with that works with buyers or brands. It could be, let's just say we're talking a big box retailer that is looking to work with Nike or, you know, a lot of their brand products that they carry within their store. And they want to be able to advertise online on their website and bring in more traffic. So it's a win-win for both parties.
Is there a shared revenue point at that? Like as far as, let's say, you know, argument's sake, let's say Publix is advertising for Nike on their website. Do they then have some sort of a shared revenue component to where they benefit from each other?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And no, it really depends on the agreement in place with those agencies, buyers, brands. Yes. So they are buying placements, digital placements online. So let's say we're talking about an online a retailer that has an online presence, and those digital placements, let's just say for Nike, are what we call sponsored ads. And Nike pays the retailer for those sponsored ads to bring in more revenue for Nike. Did I say that correctly, Brett?
You did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I feel like it's, you know, some of it people think about and they say, there's so many ads, there's so much noise around what I'm looking for online anymore. But at the same time, to your point, if people's websites or if companies' websites become more intuitive and they understand what you as a shopper are looking for, and they put better choices in front of you. I mean, I'll give you a good example. I mean, I was shopping, you know, I wasn't even shopping, but I was looking for a jacket, a new jacket. And I found probably five retailers ended up hitting, like, kind of advertising to me, probably because of my searches and everything else. But I ended up finding a very nice leather jacket that I was looking for. And I wasn't even looking for the advertiser. The advertiser essentially ended up looking for me. But price point wise and quality wise, it ended up being a much smaller retailer that I would have never found if they didn't find me. So there is truly a consumer benefit to that as well. It's not just a benefit for the business side, but it's also a benefit for us as consumers, in the sense that we get introduced to products and services that we would have never found on our own.
Absolutely. And that, you know, essentially is what we call, like, customer loyalty, and how do we retain our customers, and how do we attract them and retain them, by putting the right ads in front of them and retargeting with, you know, specific ads or products that you're looking for.
No doubt. Yeah, and I think what's happening underneath there, Jess, that's a very, like, that's a great observation. And that's one thing that we talk to clients about, is that, you know, not only is this going to be a great new revenue source for you, but your customers will appreciate it, right? Because of exactly what you're saying. And a lot of that has to do with, I won't go too deep into the weeds there, but a lot of what's happening there is, you know, with those changes that Apple made, the advertisers had to think or kind of come up with a different way to reach audiences, and try to do so in a thoughtful way, so that, you know, they're not wasting ad dollars. And so using brands are trying to figure out how to better leverage a lot of the first party data that they've been able to collect over the years. You know, a lot of these retailers have been in business very long time, you know, many, many years, decades, for some. And so if you think about the, you know, silos of data that most companies have, and you ask yourself the question, am I leveraging this data in the most effective way? Most are not, right? And that's not, you know, because they're not smart or whatever, you know, it's
just their job. They're a retailer. They're not a data expert. Where that's your job.
Yeah. And but it is impressive to talk to these companies and sort of be where we are to sort of see that across the board. More and more of these companies are hiring the folks from the advertising agencies that they used to work with in order to bring some of those skills in house and sort of kickstart their own internal version of that, because every company has to become a data company. If they're not doing that already, they're already behind. But how can we use the data that we have to delight our customers, through whatever advertising that we're doing? How can we actually pair our data with other advertisers to even get to more fine-grained audience segments so that, you know, we can delight you even more as you're looking for, that next set of golf clubs or, anything, right? Luggage.
Yeah.
Anything.
No doubt. Well, and I think that there's a fine line, or there's that art and, the art and science of also feeling non-intrusive doing so, because you don't want the person to feel like, okay, are they looking over my shoulder? Do they know, first thing in my head, I thought, how does Brett know that I like to play golf? Essentially creating that, the feeling where, hey, trust us, but don't go too far as to feel like, hey, we're spying on you.
Yeah, exactly right.
So I feel like we could talk about this all day long. I think it's fascinating. I think it's the direction where everything is going. Like it's the future of retail. It's the future of many businesses. I always think if you're going to talk about the future, though, you're going to have to talk about the past. And both of you have come into this from different backgrounds and different directions. Amy, tell our audience a little bit about your career and what has inspired you to work at V2.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a loaded question, Jesse. I
you can take it in parts.
Yeah, no, I'll start back in, 1995. Gosh, now I'm kind of telling you how old I am. I started off working in the telecommunications industry, working for the first GSM provider called
Arian. And for our audience, what is GSM?
GSM is a global network, wireless network. And GSM is essentially, when you think about the SIM cards that are in your phones, that's basically a SIM card that works on GSM technology. Awesome. Yes. And so we were the first aerial communications to come out with that technology within the United States back in 1995. From the ground up, we launched that technology here in Tampa, Florida, and it took off from there. So that was my experience, not only within technology, but within telecommunications, which was a great one. I worked for them for several years and went on when wireline became very popular as well. It makes sense, wireless technology and wireline technology. Went on to work for some of your larger, well-known global telecommunications companies like AT&T, Sprint, and Nextel.
So you've been in the technology space for most of your career. Like you've had a passion for it for quite a while.
Yes, I have. Whether it comes down to like software or hardware, I love the technology. I love learning. I love educating on what that technology means to a business owner and how it can make them produce more revenue, learning more about their industries, and then sharing kind of my expertise and how I would fit in and consult with businesses on how we can help them with technology.
Very cool. Brett, what about you? What brought you to V2 and where, like, how did you get here?
Yeah. So my background, as you mentioned at the top, is in digital marketing and e-commerce. I've been in the space for, about 15 years. I had worked, as an agency, within an agency. I had worked on the brand side, running e-commerce teams. I had even been out on my own as a consultant. As you introduced me, you mentioned like strategist and consultant, like really those are the two sort of things for me that in any of the work that I've done,
I really try to,
I kind of naturally come from that place. I think about the big picture. I think about market forces. I think about competition. I try to
advise, you know,
and
just provide a little bit more context for,
you know, why we might be talking in the first place, and then even look in the future and make sure that, you know, I think we do this too at V2, where we don't want to maybe, you know, the problem you called us in for maybe isn't even the right problem. Maybe it's, maybe there's another problem, or maybe if we fix this problem, there'll be another problem in like 6 months, and then you're going to call us back and you might be upset. Right. Or
so really zooming out to really understand, like if we were to talk to a client today, as an example, you know, it's January.
We're not going to just say like, well, what's wrong with X? We're going to ask probably a bigger question, which is, what are your goals for 2023? You know,
sure.
I kind of hopped over the question, but I got connected with V2. I was running my own consultancy out of basically like a WeWork up here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I was working with a lot of startups to help them scale their e-commerce efforts. And so with that, you know, a lot of strategy and thinking about the brand and the brand identity, which
is a lot of fun. I really enjoy, you know, that side of marketing too, some of the, you know, let's call it softer creative, you know, things. But
my area at this workspace just happened to be next to one of our, one of the members of our executive team at V2. We had an office right next to where my office was, and you know, just through water cooler chat and things like that, we realized, you know, hey,
although I wasn't working on Salesforce at the time,
you know, we realized, like, you know, we're always looking for good consultants, we're always looking for people that can, you know, speak well and, you know how to talk about, you know, marketing, technology,
client services, anything like that. Why don't you come
take a shot and see if this is something you might be interested in? Personally, for me at the time, I was, you know, taking care of my elderly parents, and I had been running my own consultancy for about 3.5 years at the time, and was just ready. You know, I didn't intend to do that. I had
started that because I was decided to go back to school and get my MBA.
And so I started doing the consulting on my own as a way to just, you know, sort of supplement the income I wasn't getting at the time.
And then it just kept going, and I was really pleased to see that, but it was a lot of work, you know,
as you know, running your own business,
sure,
doing everything, never getting, vacation days or even a lot of the benefits, you know, that most people at a company enjoy. But
so when it
happened, when the opportunity came up, you know, I said, look, I've been doing this for 3.5 years. That's a win for me. I was making good money, but I
was kind of also like, I want to get back with some peers. I want to get back with some colleagues. You know, I want to keep learning and growing. And so, yeah, you know,
getting back into an agency with V2, seeing the opportunity to learn the Salesforce ecosystem. I'd actually used Salesforce products in the past,
you know, commerce, cloud, of course, sales cloud as well. But
this gave me an opportunity to, you know, kind of face a new challenge and get into a new ecosystem. And yeah, it's been great.
Very cool. I feel like that there, again, it's just like anything else. I think, you know, confused minds say no. When you have, such a large elephant to eat, you know, people always ask how to eat an elephant. It's one bite at a time. And you guys are truly helping people integrate very large technology platforms into their existing businesses, large businesses, people that have been around a long time that have a great product and a great service, but maybe they're not where they need to be in 2023. And I think that, you know, it sounds to me like V2 has done an incredible job of putting incredibly talented people such as yourselves in front of clients to give them, you know, not necessarily a guard dog to technology, but a guide dog as far as leading them through and helping them take what they do very well and transform it into a modern and futuristic economy that we're going to be seeing here in the next several years. Amy, if people want to learn more about you and about V2, and they wanted to have a conversation about possibly integrating with their business, where can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, or they can, you know, email me, amy.fargo@b2sa.com. Or they can go, you know, directly to our LinkedIn profile page, which is V2 Strategic Advisors. Plenty of places to find myself and Brett. But, you know, absolutely happy to consult with other businesses or even educate other, you know, executives that are looking to learn more about our industry. We do a lot of education and what we call enablement sessions for retailers and, you know, just for other executives that want to learn more about what we do.
Well, I certainly thank you both for being on the show. I feel like I would love to have you back on. I feel like we could dive into each topic kind of, you know, and take it again, a bite at a time. There's just so much to this. Thanks again, both of you, for being on the show.
No, thank you for having us.
I'll tell you what, we covered a lot of ground in a short amount of time in our conversation today. One of my biggest takeaways is that there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and you need to have a wide net if you want to compete in the retail space these days. That's going to be a wrap for us today. I want to thank Amy and Brett for joining me. I'll catch you guys next time.